Hi, I'm Yaakov Katz, and welcome to the Jewish People Policy Institute's Inside Analysis of the State of Affairs in Israel and the Jewish World. First, let me welcome you back from the holiday of Passover. And to those who celebrated, I hope you enjoyed. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and probably all of Israel are facing the greatest dilemma since the initial decision of whether to enter the Gaza Strip in the aftermath of the horrific Hamas massacre on October 7th. Now the question is, does Israel go into Rafah, as has long been anticipated, to finally take down the remaining Hamas battalions? Or does it make a deal to get back however many hostages it can, with the price of having to release Palestinian prisoners and agreeing to an extended cessation of hostilities and operations and a ceasefire, of course, in the Gaza Strip? And if it does do that, what will happen to Prime Minister Netanyahu's coalition? Will it fall, or will Netanyahu be able to keep the government together by promising an operation in Rafah at a later date? And what will this do to relations with the United States, which has said that it is opposed to a large-scale offensive in Rafah, but has also stood by Israel during the last 7 months in a way not foreseen? All of this and more is what I talk about in today's episode with Brigadier General Nitzan Nouriel, a former combat officer who still serves in the IDF reserves, and also was the former counterterrorism advisor to the Prime Minister, both Netanyahu and Ehud Olmert before him. There's lots to discuss, so here we go. Brigadier General Nitzan Nouriel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
So I want to start, and I want to get into the dilemma that Israel currently is facing. Do we go into Rafah? Do we agree to a ceasefire and a hostage release? But before we get to that, and I want to hear your opinion, after over 200 days of this war, and most of it with the IDF operating in the Gaza Strip, how do you sum things up as of now in terms of Israel's successes and achievements vis-a-vis Hamas?
I believe that we are in a stage which it's too soon to say how that war will impact the Middle East. And therefore, we cannot at that stage summarize nothing but some tactical actions took place by the IDF in order to study and to make sure that we can do better in the next few weeks. It's too soon to say. We need to understand why Rafah it is so important for us. And that will, in a way, give us better tool to understand the dilemma and understand what are the options we have. Rafah is important not because the four battalions that are still there.
The four Hamas battalions.
Yes, Rafah is important because the message to the Palestinians who lives in Gaza that after we will take Rafah, Hamas will not be able to control Gaza for good. Without strong message like that, the people of Gaza will stay afraid from Hamas, and therefore they will cooperate with Hamas, and therefore we will keep see those terror attacks coming from this area. So we need to make sure that the people of Gaza understand that by the end of the military operation, regardless the answer who is going to control Gaza, it will not be Hamas.
Mm-hmm. There's also the element in Rafah, which is important also to note, of the smuggling tunnels that they have along the border with Egypt, which Israel hasn't really been able to deal with, because it has yet to go into Rafah on the ground. That would be something that Israel would also, in the Philadelphia corridor, right? That would also be a target.
Yes, absolutely. But I believe that we are living in a stage which the Egyptians themselves will probably try to do more in order to reduce those phenomena. Some of it belong to the Egyptian economy. But most of it is a security issue that all the players, us, the Americans, the Egyptians, the Gulf states, those who are going to invest a lot of money in order to recover Gaza will be part of the overall efforts to block those channels, meaning the tunnels under the Philadelphia corridor.
And I get the importance, and I tend to agree with you. There's the importance of militarily taking down these Hamas battalions, number one. Number two, the message that you said would be conveyed to the Palestinian people of Gaza, which is super important. Probably the message also to the world that Israel doesn't stop and keeps on going because to achieve its goals. But we do have the hostages. And the issue on the table right now, assuming that Hamas, we're talking on Wednesday afternoon, so assuming that Hamas gives an answer that it accepts the deal as been proposed to it by the Egyptians, I see you nodding your head saying no, but let's, one second, Israel will have to decide, does it take the deal or does it say no deal? I'm still going into Rafah. Now, what I want to ask, though, is assuming there's, let's hope there's a deal. We all want hostages to come home. Is there another way for us to deal with Rafah that will not be sending in a division, a couple of brigades on the ground into that part of the Gaza Strip?
Let's define between the hostages, big issue, and your second side of your questions regarding what will be the future of Gaza. This is a political question. And therefore, the answer belongs to the politicians. At that stage, the Israeli government, because of political reasons, do not want to speak about who will control Gaza by the end of the war. It is a political issue. It's not a practical issue. Because practically, we do have few answers. But any answer we will bring into the table at that stage will create a political crisis. And the prime minister does not want to be at that stage in a political crisis. So he is, in a way, avoid dealing with the questions, who is going to control Gaza by the day after. It is not good for us. It is not good for the military. It's not good for those who needs to plan for the next future, and yet they don't speak about it. So the options we have, if you combine those three big issues, hostages, Rafah, and the future of Gaza, is going into the timeline. Rafah can wait. The hostages probably less. And the questions who is going to control Gaza are also very important. And I would like to think that within a few weeks, we will come with answers, because without those answers, I'm using as a metaphor, you are like a marathon man that does not know where the stadium is. And this is a big issue.
And that would be a big issue. Wait, so, but Nitzan, If I go with what you just said, Rafah can wait. We can deal with Rafah. I get the hostages out, please God. And I have to pull out most of my forces and I have to agree to a ceasefire for an extended period of time. Hamas, those 15,000 or so Hamas armed men in the Rafah area, they'll disperse. I won't be able to find them in the same way that I have them isolated today in the southern part of the Gaza Strip. How will I get to them if I wait?
This is a huge dilemma. We believe that as long as we can keep the Netzarim corridor, meaning we will not let certain type of people moving from the southern part of Gaza up to the northern part of Gaza, that will be an issue that we can manage in the next future. I'm not saying that there are easy solutions, but when you have to put the hostages issues on the table, they don't have time. And as many as we can release, it's better to do it sooner than later.
Based on the results so far of the war, and assuming that were able to eventually operate in Rafah and take down more of the Hamas infrastructure. There's no elimination of Hamas, right? And as some people might have spoken about in the beginning of this war, we're never going to get to every last Hamas man. We're not going to be able to destroy the idea of Hamas. So I know that you mentioned the political echelon does not want to talk about the political resolution because of politics. We're aware of that. But from a military standpoint, from your perspective, Hamas has been weakened to the point that it can no longer serve pose a threat to Israel. It has been weakened to the point that it can be replaced as the control and sovereign ruler of the Gaza Strip?
Hamas can still control Gaza, meaning he can force the population to follow him. He can force the people to pay for him, and so far and so on. Hamas cannot, at that stage, launch type of terror attack that will be problematic for us. They can keep launch new rockets. I'm not saying that it's nothing. I'm saying that we know how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So the threat from Hamas and the Islamic Jihad from Gaza toward the state of Israel went down into the lowest level ever. Is this enough? The answer is no. But the achievements, as you said in the beginning, from that military conflict at that stage, from that perspective, is the best achievement we have till Hamas took over Gaza in the winter of 2007.
You know, you've spent time beyond 30 plus years in the IDF, but you also were the counterterrorism advisor to the prime minister, not to the current prime minister, but the prime ministers before. And I'm curious, as someone who spent time in that prime minister's office, this dilemma that Israel is currently facing with, what is it like making these types of decisions at that level?
Let me just correct you. I had the privilege to work with Bibi 3 years.
I was the
head of the counterterrorism bureau with both Ulmert and then Bibi. So I believe that I know the way he's taking decisions. I know the mechanism he used to work with. From that chair, from that perspective, counterterrorism, it's like running a marathon. It is not something that you can do within days, weeks, or even a year. If you go back into Judah and Samaria, it took us many, many years before we could say that we control in a way the tempo of their activities from Judah and Samaria through the state of Israel, through the Israelis. And yet, every week we are facing a terror event. So it's like never-ending story. It is not something that you can solve even via agreements. I believe that even within 2-3 years from now, let's dream that we have peace treaty with all the Arab nation in the Middle East. We still have to deal with some terror cells that do not accept that concept.
Right.
And it will happen forever. I keep saying that we, the modern society, need to study to live side by side with terrorism as we started to live side by side with criminality. It's almost the same. No one preferred to live next to thieves or rapers or some aggressive, violent people. And yet we study how to do it. We are asking the law enforcement forces to make sure that A, it's not in my neighborhood, and B, to keep it in a level which I can live with.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing about terrorism. Therefore, we, the Western society, are going to live side by side with terrorism forever.
The question is then, what is the level of that terrorism, right? And do we have, when you were you mentioned the West Bank, do we have freedom of operation, which we've had since Operation Defensive Shield in the West Bank, the ability to go in, which did not have in the Gaza Strip? And hopefully let me jump a level here, but I'm guessing that might be what we're trying to create also in Gaza, that even in the day after, we'll have to keep going in, similar to what we do in Qalqilya, Tulkarm, Jenin, or Nablus.
Yeah, the mechanism is the same. We need A, freedom of movement, and B, some cooperation with the Palestinian security forces, which we have, still have in Judea and Samaria. We still have a nice level of cooperation with Palestinian security forces, not because they like us, because they're afraid for the Hamas.
Right.
And we want to use the same methods in Gaza Strip, A, freedom of movement, and B, someone that will be able to cooperate with us in order to reduce the level of terrorism, not because he likes us, because he very much remember what Hamas did back then in 2007 when he took over. And the Palestinian security forces know very well that they need us in order to make sure that Hamas will not take over again. So we have common interest.
Nitzan, assuming there is, let's say, a hostage deal in the Gaza with Hamas, and we get back 30, 40, however many of the hostages that we're able to succeed in retrieving, and we agree to a ceasefire for an extended period of time, is your assessment that Hezbollah will also stop shooting during that period of a ceasefire? And if there's a permanent ceasefire, let's say the war is over, does that mean that the war in the north is also over?
Two different questions. Hezbollah said when there is a ceasefire or end of war down in the south, he will not use that front against us. The question we need to ask ourselves, is this good enough for us?
Right.
Can we live with a stage which Hezbollah still sits on the border, still have those type of ammunition that can threaten our villages? The answer is no. So sooner or later, we need to come with solutions. And the solutions are very simple. Hezbollah should pull back far enough from the Israeli border. The Lebanese military forces should go and capture that area and make sure that that border is quiet. Can we trust them? Very good question. Do we need international guarantee? The answer is yes. Can we trust them? Good question.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that we are living in a stage which we need to take actions against Hezbollah and only then going into kind of an international agreement.
When you mean actions with Hezbollah, you mean we should escalate the conflict a bit more with them?
We should take the action so Hezbollah will move behind the Litani River and will disarm himself into this area. They are not going to do it voluntarily.
Mm-hmm.
They are not going to do it and to declare it. And they are going to cheat all the players as they did in the past.
Right.
So probably we need to do it by ourselves.
And can that happen during an operation in Gaza, or it would be preferable for Israel to wait to first finish Gaza, then focus on the north, do one at a time?
Historically, the state of Israel cannot fight and win two fronts at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back into the 67 war, we start with Egypt, move to Jordan, and then Syria. 73 war, we dealt with Syria and then moved to Egypt. In order to fight and win two fronts at the same time, we need to decide who should come first. And we said Gaza come first. And only then we can move into the northern front.
Mm-hmm.
We will not be able to have an offensive actions at those two fronts at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Nitzan, you spent a lot of time in the United States. You were the attaché to ground forces, and in your reserve service, you for many years have been the coordinator, basically, of international drills, so including the United States and other countries from around the world. you know, there's a lot to talk about on the political level between Israel and America. So I'm going to leave that aside because you are still a reserve officer. I'm not going to get you into trouble. But I mean, we've seen amazing military cooperation here between Israel and the United States, from the shipment of weapons and the continued supply of ammunition and spare parts and equipment for the IDF and particularly for the Air Force, but also lots of visits of officers coming back and forth from America to here and going to frontline command posts and watching and learning and seeing how this new hybrid warfare that Israel is fighting is actually being prosecuted in this conflict. What can you tell us about the nature of that relationship today, military to military?
In order to understand, we need to go back into 2001 when the United States decided that Israel will be part of CENTCOM. Before 2021, Israel was part of EUCOM, the European Command.
Right.
When United States decided that Israel should be under CENTCOM, practically it's mean that four-star general, General Kurila, has responsibility to defend the state of Israel. And they know very well who are the bad guys, Iran and all their proxies, and who are the good guys that can create new type of coalitions against Iran, which is Israel and the pragmatic Sunni states. And actually all the concept went into that those directions. All the exercises were practicing scenarios like that. Mm-hmm. And actually what happened 2 weeks ago was amazing case, which all the scenarios we played during the exercise came through.
That was the Juniper Cobra exercises over the years, right? Yeah,
the Juniper Cobra scenario was conduct 100% in Death 9.
Mm-hmm.
That shows all of us that all the great work they did along the years works very well. Is this enough? The answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is no. And therefore, we need to look for more solutions, more layer of cooperation, and more and more and more from everything, till reaching the point that Iran will say, we cannot deal without those systems. And therefore, we need to find totally different issues. I'll touch only one small example. If we can demonstrate that all those partners can detect and intercept any warheads launching by the Iranians from Iran and be able to take care of it above the Iranian themselves, they maybe will understand that the all nuclear project is not good for them. This is deterrence all about.
So wait, these are systems that will be able to intercept Iranian missiles over Iran? That's what you're talking about. Today, Israel does not have that capability, right?
We do, but it's not wide enough.
Uh-huh.
Think of set of radars sitting all over the Gulf states, set of sensors, including satellites, interceptors all over the Middle East.
Mm. Okay.
Such as Aero 3 or Aero 4 or even the SM-3.
Scattered throughout the region, not just in
Israel.
That's right. Right.
Detect those missiles the moment somebody launched them.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to detect and intercept them over Iran. Then you have to think twice before you are launching non-conventional warheads.
I mean, the truth is, before what happened two weeks ago, I would have said, that's a fantasy. But then again, it was a fantasy to think that the Jordanians and the Saudis and all these other and the French and the Americans and the British and everyone would be helping to intercept all those rockets and missiles and drones 2 weeks ago. So maybe this idea of Israeli missile defense systems all across the region is not a fantasy anymore.
And a concept like that can work very well also in Europe and also in the Far East. So it's something that will be good, not only for us, it will be a dramatic, effective tool for those who believe that we need to reduce the tents all over the globe. And that would be very effective.
Very interesting. And Nitzan, before I let you go, you know, as a former senior officer, someone who still serves a lot in the reserves, you know, the military is shaking these days, especially at the level of the general staff. There was the resignation of the head of Amman military intelligence, Aaron Khalifa. There was a poll just the other night on one of the main TV shows in Israel, news shows on Channel 12. 50% of Israelis think that Chief of Staff Herzi Halevi should step down immediately. What do you think, and you know, we don't have to get into specific names, but when it comes to the taking of responsibility of the current general staff, and not necessarily just Herzi Halevi, but other members of the Matkal, should they be stepping down now? Should they be stepping down after an investigation, a post-war inquiry has been done? And should it be everyone? I mean, how do you see this playing out?
Let me tell you something from my personal perspective, and I'll speak about myself. I'm 64 years old. I've spent 46 years to defend the state of Israel and to defend the Israeli nation, the Jewish nation. And I feel very, very, very bad, because we know that during the October 7th, we failed. And we have a lot to do in order to build up the trust again. And it will take time. It will take time. I believe that those who believe that they have to take responsibility, and at least in the military, at least in the ISA, they already said, we have to take responsibility. But, and this is a bit a political statement, they can do it only after a pure declaration about the next elections. They cannot leave the stage now. They are not allowed to leave the stage now. Because in that case, it would be very easy for all the politicians to say, you see, we told you it's only security forces false, and they will stay clean. And this is not the case. So I believe that the Israeli generals and the ISA, Ronen Bar, they can leave the stage only after pure declaration. When are the next election in Israel? So it will be 100% that those who are going to pick the successors will be someone that got the permission from the people of the state of Israel. And I'm sorry to combine political issues with, let's say, professional issues, but this is the stage we are living with. You cannot really separate between those two topics.
No, very interesting. And you're right, because if as knowing the politicians that we have, if the chief of staff were to step down now, the prime minister would say, okay, he took responsibility because it was his fault. I don't have to take responsibility. So connecting the two does make for a pure process, no doubt. Brigadier General Nitzan Uriel, thank you so much for joining us. It was great to get your insight.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you for joining us, as always, here at JPPI for our Inside Analysis webinar podcast. You can catch us on Mondays and Thursdays now that we're back to the regular schedule after the Passover holiday. Have a great weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll see you next week.